Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to DTNS Labs. I'm Tom Merritt, and this is the version of Labs where I interview interesting people about the things that they do. And in light of the loot box controversies that have been out there, that was a big topic at E3. We had gaming companies in some cases coming out and apologizing or saying, we will not do them. And sometimes the same game company in a different game ignoring the idea altogether because they just didn't wade into it. We thought we'd bring on Matt Campbell, owner of Battleshopper.com, and he is also a mobile gaming developer at a mobile gaming company, to talk about his histories with trading card games, how they play, how they deal with laws. Matt, thanks for joining us, man.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure.
Many of you in the community will know Matt if I identified him as Waffleophagus, his name in the chat room, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
Real quickly, where's that name come from?
Oh, that was given to me. The very short version that will leave you wanting more is it was given to me by a coworker at summer camp who was sleeping at the time that he gave it to me.
I'm intrigued. You're right. It definitely leaves me wanting more. All right. We'll keep an eye out for the rest of that story. But let's talk about how in casino games there is all of this confusion because like anything, you can have an in-game purchase, right? In Animal Crossing, I can buy leaf tickets, and then those leaf tickets can be used to buy things in the game for my characters and things like that. How is it different with casino games, which, as I understand it, they can be entirely free-to-play, right?
Yeah, so these casino games, you have mobile games in general. I'm guessing you're talking about the article that the story you talked about where Big Fish was being sued in Washington State, where that company is based, and the judge effectively ruled that it was gambling due to the fact that they did the chips were something of value.
Right. And we've had similar evaluations in European countries as well. Even in Australia, there was some kicking around. Let's focus on the Washington one for now.
Yeah. So the way it plays out is all these casino games, all these mobile games are Hearthstone falls into almost the exact same category where it is free to play. They give you enough resources to play for free. And although a lot of these casino ones are falling much closer towards the line of something like a Candy Crush, where you run out of lives, and if you want to continue going, you can either wait for 12 hours, 24 hours, whatever the time limit is to get your next bonus or free amount of allotment, or you can buy into it and pay to get, in this case, more chips.
To me, that's almost equivalent to unlocking the game. You're paying to unlock the game locks every so often. And just like a game that locks after a free trial, you could say, well, this one just locks every 12 hours and then unlocks. If you want to have it unlocked all the time, pay a little money.
That is a very fair way of doing it. On the back end, we do have methodologies of trying to get you to give us more money more often, but that is just the way that I think all good gaming companies should.
Okay, that actually brings up a really good question, because I already hear people in the audience like, right, I know what those methodologies are. You make me lose so that I want to buy your stuff to win, right? I got to pay to win. Is that a thing that happens?
No. All of our the one thing that I think I can say is that all of our stuff is it is properly random.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say for complete sure, because our game logic is such that is above my head in understanding, and we have much smarter engineers than me that work on those.
Sure.
But just in casual conversations with them, it is random, and they can kind of guess how often a specific thing will occur, but that they are still at the end of the day guessing because of the logic they have put in place to make these things random. There are scripted events in our games that mm-hmm. will say, well, when you're first coming to this thing, this will give you a positive experience. But very rarely, to my understanding, do we actually have we don't, at least at our company, do not have a system that goes in and actually makes you lose more often, although I have heard many stories myself that there are games in the industry that do that.
Okay, so you've heard tell that maybe some folks do that, so it might exist out there. I think most gaming companies don't want to do that, because it feels bad. And if you're feeling bad playing a game, I don't see why you'd want to spend more money on that game.
Well, there actually is some psychology behind the idea of if you don't lose at something, if it's not challenging you in any way, and therefore, obviously, like, if you're doing nothing but winning, it also becomes less interesting due to the fact that
it's got
to
be a balance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to talking a little bit about gambling, because I think people get caught up into like, well, I don't think that's gambling. I think this is gambling. And those are fair conversations. But when we're talking about these court cases, we're not talking about what you or I or Matt or anybody else thinks is gambling. There are laws, and they vary from place to place, about what is considered a prohibited behavior, what is considered a behavior you have to get a license to do, and what is considered not a prohibited behavior. And in general, most games have felt like, well, you're not winning anything. You're not winning money, so we're not gambling. How is it then that loot boxes, where I'm saying, well, I'm buying a thing, I don't know what's in it, it's like a blind box toy, but the thing that's in it might be helpful to me in the game. How does that get interpreted as gambling? And I'm not asking you to be a legal expert here, Matt,
right.
but sort of, you know, from the game designer perspective, how are you looking at this and trying to design against it?
Here's the rulings that came down in Washington and the ones that in Europe, the Belgian one was, I believe, the one you talked on the show, that reading mm-hmm. how they've interpreted those, it is actually going to be somewhat problematic, because the way that they have kind of phrased it is, as you often see in instances of maybe don't take all the information into account, because the way that they are effectively saying it, any random thing that affects the game affects that. So it's not just your, in the case of the Big Fish lawsuit, buying more chips, anything, or it is anything that has a random aspect that influences your game. So your Hearthstone booster pack, it goes beyond that to even your Magic the Gathering paper booster pack, or your baseball card trading. That could be considered gambling at this point.
And it hasn't been.
Right.
So there's got to be something in the judge's mind that says, well, I'm not trying to outlaw trading card games. But there's a lot of uncertainty around it.
Right, and I think it's in the cases of this is, I think that the judge just doesn't – that's not part of his case. So that's not something that he thought of when he made this ruling, even not understanding that this ruling would be that wide-reaching.
I think that's the biggest thing to take away from this stuff right now is we're in those early days where 15 judges are going to have 15 different opinions on it until we start to consolidate some cases and get appeals.
Yeah, and as far as like – the one thing that brought up this entire controversy is, of course, the EA's Star Wars Battlefront 2. And they have a few other properties, like the FIFA properties, where they have this very – it very heavily influences the game where you are getting these random chances, at least in the case of Battlefront 2 that has been entirely removed from the game. But that is the where it sparked the controversy. And I would say as a consumer, I would say the way that that differs from, say, your free-to-play game is very much that. It is a free-to-play game, and you can kind of pay a little more if you want to continue playing it. But with Battlefront, you are already – you have spent – in the United States, you have spent $60 to play this game. And then they kind of just can expect you to continue playing to be competitive at what would otherwise be a purely skill game. Some of the power-ups were had a higher rate of fire, your fire was more accurate, that was just strictly made one player strictly better than another. While in Hearthstone, it doesn't matter because you might get a better card, but that doesn't necessarily always guarantee that you'll beat your opponent.
Right, because some of the best cards suddenly, because of the meta switches, aren't as good as they used to be. And so just owning a card doesn't guarantee you. But it still is gambling to open a card pack, isn't it? Because you're getting something of value and you don't know what it is.
So I could talk to you for 45 minutes on this exact topic, and the way that I would say that is it I would vary that very heavily by what game you're pulling that booster pack in. For Hearthstone, I would say that those really don't have a value, although actually if you really want to get down to it, there are some Redditors that have gone in and looked at the dollar value of a pack and then the average dust value. So they've actually put a dollar value to a Hearthstone dust, which for those of you who are uninitiated is what if I have card A and I want card B, you blow card A up and make some dust, and then card B has a dust value to generate. And it's some incredibly small number. But for something like Magic the Gathering or Hex, which is this game that I have a store for that is a proper trading card game, cards are given a value by the community as a whole, and that is usually, in some cases, like a direct dollar value. And the reason why that really isn't gambling either is due to the fact that, like, at the end of the day, it's something that, like, there isn't a set price. There isn't a set value for this other than what the community at large has given it. And I mean, you could honestly say yes, it is gambling. Like you could make that argument, and you could make that argument really well. But they've been around. But at this point, at least in the legal stance, like I think the chances of them going back and saying this game that has been around for 25 plus years, and this concept that has been around since Nintendo started as a trading card game company in the early 1900s, forever ago. That's year was wrong. I'm just putting it out there for you. Email them.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, Visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
And that going back and saying this concept of a trading card game is gambling, I don't think is going to happen.
What we're dealing with is laws that were written for tables and cards to say this is gambling. If you right. are able to put money in, play a game and get money out at the poker table, at the blackjack table, at the slot machine, and you get something of value out, it's gambling. And usually the laws are written to make folks who are trying to get around it. Like, oh, I don't want to have to get a gambling license, so I'll sell you credit to the bar, and then you can use that on the machine. They're like, no. If you're getting, say, it doesn't matter if it's not actually cash. If it can be traded in for cash, then it's something of value. And so people trying to get around the law are what caused this more vague terminology. And then it's another example of the internet comes along and is entirely unanticipated by older laws, and judges are trying to apply that and saying, well, I don't know. I mean, it kind of looks like these cards are valuable. They're being traded online by people. There's a dollar value, and you pay money to get the pack, and you don't know what's in it. And so you might win something that's really valuable and be able to cash it out. So I don't know. It's starting to look like gambling to me, even though trading card games are not trying to get around gambling laws. They're trying to emulate a practice that has never been litigated as problematic, things like Magic the Gathering or baseball card trading cards or et cetera, right?
Yeah, and it's really unique with some of these online cards because it's kind of funny that specifically with Magic, at scale, you can take all the gambling out. If I go out and buy, you know, hundreds and hundreds of booster packs, the way that they actually do the – they are limited by the way they actually print the cards that I can remove all of the gambling out of it, because I can confidently say if I buy this amount, I'm going to get X amount of copies of every card. And that's how these large, large stores go out and say, well, I'm going to get go out and buy this many packs to, and I can pre-sell these cards because I know – this is how this math will play out. It gets really interesting with the digital space because you don't have that history of print runs and history of being able to extrapolate that math unless they program it in, and they usually don't. And that is actually one of the biggest kept secrets, especially you'll see with Hearthstone, of they do not want to tell you how they go in and say, well, this card appears this percentage of the time. And so that is one aspect that I think was one of the things in some of the rulings in the EU where they say they want that to be a much less opaque methodology, which I am watching like a hawk, not because it will influence my business at all, because in the game that I actually buy and sell for, they're decently transparent. If you go up and ask, they'll tell you, and it's admittedly not that old school print run. It is very in order to remove some of that variance, you'd have to buy an incredibly large amount, but over the course of the distribution, it's incredibly flat, meaning that over the larger course of time, there isn't going to be more than one card than another in the game, which in large economic methods that are slightly above my head usually means that one card isn't going to be worth more than the other than it's not going to be rarer than the other. The price will only be influenced by how good it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're probably going to end up needing amendments, if not new laws, to apply to digital, because the other side of it is if we said, oh, okay, we're going to exempt Hearthstone, we're going to exempt Hex, we're going to exempt any digital version of a trading card game because it's just a trading card game, you'll suddenly see a bunch of people who are trying to get around gambling laws come up with something that allows you to gamble by pretending to be a card game. So it needs to be a fine line that says, okay, first of all, it has to be more than just a token that's valuable because it's a token, right? I can't go buy a $50 token for a casino somewhere outside the casino at all, first of all. But even if I could, I wouldn't be able to buy it for more than $50 or less than $50. Like, it's $50, right? It's exactly equivalent. Whereas trading card values ebb and flow, like you were talking about. And, you know, as a card is more valuable in a game, if it is able to be traded offline for actual money, that value is going to go up and down because its value isn't money. Its value is utility. So you have to be able to show utility, I think, to be an exemption for gambling, or there's something in there that you could define. And I'm curious, as a developer, what do you think the solution would be that would work for you and stop actual gambling from happening where it needs to be regulated, but allow trading cards and responsible loot boxes to work?
Well, and so here's kind of the crux of the issue, which is what you're attempting to do is we'll use there are two kinds of game, card games that are common right now that is a very subtle distinction. A collectible card game, which is Hearthstone. In Hearthstone, I cannot trade a card to you. You have to do the dust transfer, like I said earlier. And in that case, it is quite literally impossible for you to cash out or have any monetary actual value. You can't sell cards. There's only money to be put into the system. And in that scenario, Blizzard can kind of set the unquote or quote unquote price of the card by deciding how much dust it blows up into and how much dust you need to create it. This sounds like I'm getting on a tangent, but it comes back, I promise. Then there's the trading card game, which is much Hex, Magic the Gathering. Valve's upcoming Artifact is going to be using, because they have the marketplace already in place for all of their other stuff, using that system. That is a proper trading card game. And in those games, it's going to be incredibly hard to do any legislation, because effectively what you're trying to do is legislate a third party. Wizards of the Coast, who makes Magic the Gathering, doesn't set individual card prices for their cards. That is set. They only sell booster packs, or in some cases supplementary things where it's like, buy this pre-built deck. And so the secondary market, the community at large, decides how good the card is, and therefore assigns a price to it. So any legislation is actually actively trying to influence third parties in this, which, I am no lawyer, but that seems a heck of a lot harder than going to Blizzard and saying, hey, this needs to be this price, because Wizards of the Coast can't, unless they completely change their business model writ large, I think I used that word right, they're not going to be able to go in and say, well, this card is this price and you have to pay this price for it, because they're only selling it in the context of randomized booster packs.
Well, and I think that's where you can write a new legislation, which is to say, if there's utility to the item beyond just cashing out, if the maker of the item is basically selling the item undifferentiated by price, and any price outside of the game is not set by the company making the game, it's entirely set by the community, then it's not gambling.
I'm sure
there's cracks in that because it's oversimplistic, but that seems like a good start.
And obviously you would need lawmakers to go in and fill in cracks and make sure this will work. But that sounds like the beginning of something that would work, because, and again, at the end of the day, the only way that, like, Wizards of the Coast, if a card in Magic gets to $100, the only way that Wizard can quote unquote cash in and like make more money by having this card be worth $100 is they reprint it in a new set and put it in booster packs. And then that gives that new people an incentive to go buy that new set.
Yeah.
And usually when they do that, that card stops being $100 and drops down a good amount because there's more demand to meet, or there's more supply to meet the demand.
Yeah. Even if you bought playing cards in packs of five, and you weren't sure if you're going to have an ace in it. If that's the way it worked, buying the playing cards wouldn't be the gambling. It's what you do with the playing cards that becomes the gambling. Yeah, Matt, we could talk about this all day long, but I really appreciate you taking some time to share your insights on this.
Oh, yeah, no, it's been a blast. I wouldn't mind talking longer.
if folks want to find you online to talk about this stuff or look into what you're doing with trading cards, where should they go?
So I own a store for the game called Hex, H-E-X, Hex Shards of Fate. It's available on Steam, and it is a really fun game that is based very heavily it's very similar to Magic the Gathering. That has a lot of really interesting design spaces. If you like Hearthstone, you should go ahead and check that out. And if you do, check out Battle Shopper, BattleShopper.com .com. It's where we buy and sell. We also have a blog that talks about strategy and stuff of that nature. It's a much smaller game than any of the others that we've talked about so far, but it's a really well-built, well-designed game at the moment, and I'm still in love with it. I guess if you want to talk about my ramblings that have nothing to do with that game, just Waffleophagus on Twitter, which is the word waffle, and then it's O-P-H-A-G-U-S.
Waffleophagus.
Yes, sir.
That's a way to remember how to spell it. Thanks again, Matt, for joining us. Thanks again to everybody for supporting us on Patreon, making it possible for us to do these extra episodes. I hope you get a little more insight into loot boxes and trading cards and how that all works. I know we didn't solve everything, but we certainly got a little closer. We'll see you next time at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.